Now more than ever. Lowe's knows you don't just want a low price. You want the lowest price. And with our lowest price guarantee, you can count on us for competitive prices on all your home improvement projects. If you find a qualifying lower price somewhere else on the same item, we'll match it. Lowe's. We help. You save. Price match applies to same item, current price at qualifying retailers. Exclusions and terms apply. Learn how we'll match price at lowes.com/lowest price guarantee.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. W-A-T-E-R to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
Lowe's knows you want the best for dad. This Father's Day, help him take on any project with big deals on DeWalt. Right now, get a free XR 8 amp hour battery when you buy select DeWalt tools. That's not all. Get up to two free select tools when you buy a select DeWalt 20 volt max battery kit. Maximum initial battery voltage measured without a work load is 20 volts. Nominal voltage is 18.
This is the Hidden Killers podcast with Tony Bruschi and continuing coverage of the case against Karen Reed.
The defense rested on day 31 of the trial of Karen Reed, number two. It's the 11th of June, 2025, and this is where we sit. What is going to happen to Karen Reed? And here's another shocker from the day. There's no rebuttal. Hank is not doing any. I don't know. That might be a good move. I don't know. Just let it sizzle. But there is, of course, closing arguments. And we have heard a lot of reports that the jury seems to be getting restless. And when they're getting restless, that kind of means they've probably made a decision in their minds. It'll be interesting to see how that all meshes up then in the jury room come Friday. But closing arguments on Friday of this week in the trial of Karen Reed.
Does that mean that we both lost our bets?
That's when I said I thought I would go to him. You would have won because you would have been lower. Yeah.
Huh.
So, yeah.
Yeah, but this, you're 100% right about the jury. The last thing you want to do, and we know this from having been in radio for decades, we're not anymore, but you don't want to lose your audience.
Yeah.
And that jury is the audience, and I feel like they've lost them. You don't want to lose them through a commercial break. You want to give them something to come back to so that you get credit for that entire commercial break. Well, and they just fucking lost them like in the first commercial.
And they also need to be engaged with both sides. And
yes.
Look, I'm not in that room, so I can't tell you what my opinion is. And everybody who's in that room is going to probably have a different opinion. But I've heard a lot of opinions that lean towards they were very engaged with Brennan. the prosecution and felt like their time was being wasted with the defense. Not all of it, but I think from what I've heard, once they kind of felt like someone was discredited or whatever flipped their switch, and then there was a lot more of that person, that's where they started to get kind of restless. Mm-hmm. So we'll see where this goes. We'll see what they've decided on. Closing arguments are going to be very interesting. I'm imagining we're going to hear a lot more clips or see a lot more clips because there's many more that have been entered into evidence that have not yet been played. So
that's big.
I think we're going to have a very fun time with that. And today, that's what we're going to do as well. We're going to go back in time to the Karen clips that, you know, at the end of the day, you watch them all in order. And look, these are not, I'm not cherry picking these. I have all of her statements basically from these documentaries. And we're just going to go through a handful, just some of the more poignant ones when I spot them, but I don't have a list made out here of what I'm going to play, what I'm not going to play. We're just going to kind of go through and remember the Karen we once knew. The way we were.
The way we were.
We'll start with this, because I think this has not been played in court. I don't know that it's going to be played in court, but I think it should be played in court. This is, and it's actually going to start with a newscast here. I'm going to try and cue it up a little bit. This is Karen's dad and the stepmom, I believe. Getting interviewed and being asked about what they feel about what happened here to John O'Keefe. Let's take a look. Dad, I think, with one of the most incriminating clips that exist out there. Hang on. Let's go to this B-roll. Here we go.
Right before the pandemic.
They just seem to be in a happy place, you know, yeah.
And spending a lot of time together.
Yes, yes.
Uh-huh. Vacations together.
Yep.
Going out together.
If the relationship had become toxic by January 2022, as prosecutors allege, it's not apparent from this snapshot in time. At CF McCarthy's in Canton, they laugh and embrace during a night of heavy drinking. According to police, Karen would back over John and leave him for dead in a snowstorm 2 hours later. Prosecutors say it happened outside the Canton home of another Boston cop named Brian Albert. Karen says she dropped John off there for a get-together.
During your first discussions with Karen...
Here we go.
Did she believe she may have hit John?
No. No. She felt she struck something.
Well, what's did something?
She No. She felt she struck something. Why did you say that? Why did you say that out loud, oh genius father man who's trying to protect your daughter? Because something she did strike, and it happened to be John O'Keefe. What a dumb thing to say.
Well, Dad,
here's
the thing, Tony.
The guy was being honest, wasn't he?
He is. He is. But I mean, and this interview was done before anything turned to the circus it is today. But yeah, he's being honest.
He's being honest. He's recalling a conversation he had with his daughter where she was being honest, most likely, to her dad, talking about her recollection of something really fuzzy. I think that's exactly what happened.
Well, and of course,
they talked about it.
And of course, the story that dad gets is everything's fine, everything's wonderful and all that. I mean, she's keeping up an image.
Yeah.
He struck something. I said, what do you mean? Right? This was in the hospital. Right? He says, I remember, all right, backing up and hitting something.
Police find damage.
God damn. I remember backing up and hitting something. Well, guess where that was? God. That was your backing up, 3-point turn. At the Albert house. It's just like, so
it,
dad
it feels
says
like
that.
A confession.
Yeah. Here's, uh, Here's another oldie but a goodie. David Jannetty at the beginning on the court steps. Before we go down the conspiracy road, this is how he was presenting
my
the case.
My client has no criminal intent. She loved this man. She is devastated at what happened. And
no criminal intent. Devastated at what happened. There's more to that one. I guess I don't have all of it, but it does talk more about it, something about if this is a horrible accident, something to that nature. It's out there. It's published. But again, that was kind of the angle that was being looked at the beginning. Karen says it herself in the doc, and we'll get to it in a moment, where what if I hit him? You know, what could be going on here? Then he tells her, yeah, you're going to have some culpability if you hit him.
Yeah. Yeah.
Here's another, this is one from court. This is, we'll go to this one first. It's Karen talking more.
Hurry. It was just a lawn and a heap that it wasn't a bush or a hydrant or a dog. It was a weird shaped lump at that time in those elements. And I was looking to find him on the side of the road. I was expecting I'd find him. And
I was looking to find him on the side of the road. I was expecting to find him. And then she happens to go right to the body in the snow where she was expecting to find him, which doesn't make any sense because remember, he went into the house and got beat up. So why would you be expecting to see him in the snow?
Again, why do we even have to go through this trial, you know?
It's just, it defies logic. And she's not innocent really at all anymore because to me, there's no reasonable doubt in any of this anymore. Just because you had some bought and paid for experts that are wishing happy birthday to their kids on the stand of a murder trial with a woman who lost her son. Like, happy birthday, wearing a pink tie. Sorry, you kind of, like, why don't you go for credibility here, dude?
Yeah.
It's not working out very well. Credibility is the one thing that she needs, and she doesn't have a lot of it. So, yeah, Karen's own words is what I go back to. Beyond the experts, beyond everything, Karen's own words. Here's a fun one that we've all very much have enjoyed over the years. And of course, we're going to, of course, thank our sponsor, Karen Reed Vodka, KR Vodka, where memory fails, confidence prevails, KR Vodka. This is Karen's drinking math and all 6 to 7 glorious minutes of it.
Oh, yes.
When you walked out of the bar, how many drinks had you had?
I had probably about 4. And not 4 that I completed either. I didn't drink maybe more than a few 6 at the waterfall.
And 4 drinks you felt fine to drive?
Yep.
Clip 8, please.
Okay.
And is the level of intoxication pretty high here for everybody?
It's happy.
Yeah.
It's,
you had a lot to drink, right?
I wouldn't say, I have like a normal amount. Like a vodka tonic every 40 minutes.
Okay. And so are you feeling like buzzed? And I'm not judging, I'm just trying to get
a sense. Buzzed.
Yeah.
Clip 9, please.
The final count with my alcohol intakes, probably about 5 or 6 or 4. The drinks that they were pouring me at McCarthy's, which is where I consumed most of the alcohol, was the weakest vodka tonic. It tasted just like all soda water with lime. Not that I need it to be a martini, but it might have had a splash of vodka in it. So I said, John, this drink tastes like it has no vodka in it. He said, just get a shot and mix it yourself. So each drink was being counted as a double,
So I would get a vodka tonic, and then I would pour a shot into it, so that comes too. But frankly, it just felt like a regular cocktail. It was just a really weak pour, so I asked for a shot. So for my taste, it just tasted like that's the normal strength of what a drink should be. So I had maybe two or three that are being counted as four and six. And I don't know. I felt fine. I felt like I was buzzed. And then there was one drink, the last one that was given to me, which I would have counted as three, but they're counting as my sixth cocktail. The guys that were with brought around shots, and they gave me one that I didn't drink, but I poured it in my drink. So that's now my fifth and sixth drinks, with the seventh, which is a shot that all the men did, and I poured it. So that one glass that I'm holding, that I go into the waterfall with, has three drinks in it, a vodka tonic and two shots. And which is why John said to me, you're not leaving that drink here, like you haven't touched it and just poured a bunch of wine. He's like, just take it with you, which was something he always did. So then I go into Waterfall and I put that drink down and I socialize most of the time. So that would have been my fifth, sixth, and seventh drinks. Then John orders me a drink of the Waterfall that I don't drink, that he takes with him. And then there was a round of shots that Chris Albert bought that I did take. So that would have been the night. But I did not consume nine vodka martinis or take nine shots, depending on how you count it. And the last two drinks, I did a touch.
Clip 10, please.
And I'm not as clear as I would be if I hadn't been drinking. I mean, I had drank, so, and that led me to question, like, could I have hit him? Did I run over his foot or hit him in the knee? Did I incapacitate him? I mean, I always drive with my music blasting ever since I was 16. And I know when John got out of the car to go into Fairview, I know my car was blasting because when I got in it the next morning to go look for him, I had to immediately turn it down. And I don't know, it's stormy. I have had a few cocktails. I didn't black out, but I wasn't as lucid as I would have been if I had gone to bed at 9 and drank a tea. But I was fuzzier than I would have been if I had had no alcohol.
Clip 11, please.
God, there's more.
How did you feel after that nervous? When you got the car, did you feel like you could drive? And did you feel how welcome?
I wouldn't have gotten on the expressway. I wouldn't have gotten on the expressway at 12:15 on January 29th. I mean, it was quiet. The roads were very quiet. You can see it on the videos. And I was going, you know, when I had a few drinks and I drive, I always drive extra slow. So I know my alerts aren't as sharp as they should be. But I shouldn't have been driving. But I don't think I was driving. I know I wasn't driving recklessly. I mean, I've got plenty of video of myself driving all over the place. I put my car in John's garage, which is incredibly narrow, and I had a very oversized SUV. There's a video of me driving through the intersection when we leave Waterfall to go to Brian Albert's, and I was always taught by my father, even when you have a green light, you always should tap the brake and don't know who's going to run red. And I see me doing that multiple times between 12 and 1 and 5 and 6 a.m., so I know I was driving safely, not as safely or as alert as I would be if I had no alcohol. But I was not driving recklessly by any measure.
Can I ask?
So she had about 10 drinks and she was driving safely.
She's my size, Tony, which she's like, what, 5 feet and under?
I don't know exactly what her height is, but it certainly isn't 10 drinks and you're going to be okay.
I was with some old high school friends a couple weeks back and I had two or three drinks. One was a virgin drink. And I was bombed out of my mind.
Mm-hmm.
You know, for a little while, we were sitting there gabbing for like 3 hours. It wasn't a big deal. I wasn't getting in a car and backing over anybody. But for hell's sake, it hit me. It was like, oh, yeah. I'm going to need some food here.
I think she's just such a regular drinker. It doesn't, she has such a tolerance to it that, that she thinks that she can get out there and do those things. Because she clearly has no reservations about it. She's laughing about it as she's talking about it. It's like, well, oh, yeah, it's all okay.
A way of life.
Here's a little it's more.
Just part of their social fabric.
I knew that morning that Matilda was broken, but I have no memory of a 200-pound man hitting my car in any way. And my memory is not as sharp when I drink as it is when I don't. But I don't black out. I don't wake up and say I can't remember anything from the night before. So there's no part of me that thinks I hit John. I know I didn't hit John.
Keep telling yourself that, Karen.
But you just said that you don't remember things quite vividly when you drank. You just told us that.
She just contradicts herself. Oh, by the way, and you told your dad that you struck something.
Yeah, fuck, dude.
You have no memory of striking anything, but you told your dad you struck something.
So apparently when you're hungover, too, your memory's not as sharp as it should be.
What kind of a criminal mastermind is Karen, though? You know, she even herself says that.
He's on the side of the road in a blizzard. I don't know how we ended up there. I mean, yeah, we argued that day, and then I left him very angry voicemails, but none of this makes sense. I don't think anyone with any logic would think I killed John on purpose by hitting him with my passenger side taillight, what, in the head, on another cop's lawn, and then go home, sleep it off, and then look for him the next day?
Yes.
I mean, what kind of criminal mastermind am I? Not a very good one.
Clearly not.
No, you're not.
You're not.
I've
but that
better.
Is what you did.
I have seen better.
But that is what you did. And you get really, really expressive, Karen, when you're lying. And you think if you play it off, like move my eyes around really big and make crazy faces, that is somehow going to make people. Well, she's making a crazy face. She couldn't have possibly done that. God. You speak in reverse. Usually
like her car.
The opposite of what you are saying is usually true. Remember, she has a great memory. She remembers everything from that night.
Wait, what?
I started calling all his friends and nobody had heard from him. Nobody had seen him. And then I called Jen McCabe at 4:53 and I said, I'm looking for John.
She proceeds to scream my name multiple times, and she tells me that John didn't come home. They got into a fight.
Which all this, by the way, is on tape.
Yeah.
It's not that it's up for debate.
And that she left him at the waterfall. And I say, Karen, we saw you outside of my sister's.
What was her response?
She told me that she didn't remember going there. And then she started yelling, Jen. And then she was saying, did I hit him? Could I have hit him?
And this is while you're still in your home and you're in your bed, correct?
Correct. And then she proceeded to say that she had a cracked taillight.
Ew. Karen made dozens of calls that morning. Not one to 911. If one of those calls went to 911, Johnny might still be alive. It's upsetting to think that's true.
So Jen says, you're hysterical. Come pick me up. And I'll go look for John with you. And I'm simultaneously calling Carrie Roberts. Carrie wasn't at the bar or at Fairview, but she was a friend of John's and had known John for a long time and communicated with him all the time.
Karen called me at 5:00 in the morning. I answered the phone and she said, John's dead. Carrie. And then she hung up.
I may have said to Carrie, I'm worried he's dead or something, but I didn't say unequivocally in a declarative statement, Carrie, John's dead. And if I had killed him, why would I be saying that? It doesn't make any sense.
Doesn't make any sense. You can just
No, but you're also drunk. Nothing you do makes sense.
When she gets really close to stuff, she gets really defensive. You can, there's a, her voice goes higher.
Mm-hmm.
And she gets really, there's tells that she has. Here's her.
Jen McCabe was at the crime scene and something happened. John was murdered. So Jen McCabe, it's me or her. Either I'm going down, Jen, or you are.
Sounds like she's drunk.
Relationship with John O'Keefe?
He was my friend. I love John. He was an amazing guy.
So when you went over to the storm door and looked out, what, if anything, it is?
I saw a dark SUV. So at that point, I text him here. Pull behind me at 12:31.
And at any point in time, did John O'Keefe respond to your text message?
No. And then a few minutes later at 12:40, when I say hello, I cannot be certain whether they were still out front or if they had left.
And what was your thought as far as where John was or where John had gone at that point?
At that point, I thought maybe they decided not to come in. Maybe they got into an argument.
Did you think much of it at that point?
No.
I thought I was at the, I dropped him off at the waterfall and went home. No, you didn't. No, you didn't. That was story number one. Karen.
The day after this happened, the day after John was killed, I was confused and bewildered. There was no memory of anything happening, but I had been drinking and it was late. I never heard from him again, ever, obviously. So I thought, could I have run him over? Did he try to get me as I was leaving and I didn't know it? I mean, I've always got the music blasting. It's snowing. I got the wipers going, the heater blasting. Did he come and hit the back of my car and I hit him in the knee and he was drunk and passed out and asphyxiated or something? And then when I hired David Iannetti, I asked him those questions the night of January 29th. Like, David, what if, I don't know, what if I ran his foot over or what if I clipped him in the knee and he passed out and or went to care for himself and he threw up or passed out? And David said, yeah, then you have some element of culpability. So that's how I thought about things for about 3 days.
She thought that for about 3 days.
And then she just went,
this is uncomfortable.
I don't like this.
What do I... Something
the
different.
The only ones fighting for the truth of what happened to John O'Keefe.
Carol, just to be clear, you didn't do it.
We know who did it, Steve. We know.
We know.
And we know who spearheaded this cover-up. You all know.
Yes, we do.
And no, she didn't do it. No, she didn't do it. This is an innocent woman.
Is she, though?
What is this one here?
And then I called Jen McCabe at 4:53.
Oh, we already saw that one. Yeah.
They want to believe so badly in this conspiracy theory that somebody else did this.
I think this is the other part to it where...
And my paralegal told me that...
Here we go.
A guy named Mike had called the office and he has important information for me.
Mike.
I called him back and I...
It's always Mike.
Sitting at my desk at home in my office. And, you know, he had a gravelly voice. And, you know, it was like a holy smokes moment because he said that perhaps someone else caused the death of John O'Keefe.
And this is what you're basing it on? Mike with the gravelly voice?
It's like in the X-Files, the guy who shows up in the parking garage all the time with the cigarette.
Oh, my God.
It's an old reference, though.
Here's, and then, of course, you get Alan Jackson into the mix, and here's what happens.
Very early on in the case, it was just the fog of war, right? David didn't know what he was dealing with. He comes in on this case. He had never met Karen before. She's accused of hitting this guy, a cop, with her car, and he ends up dying. And David is standing there with his hands out going, I wonder what happened. I need some evidence. I don't have anything. But then he got a call at his office, and this person said in almost whispered tones, you need to look at the folks inside 34 Fairview.
This is all you're basing this on.
You need to look really hard at the homeowners. You need to look really hard at the occupants of the house.
Wait, why wasn't this guy called as a witness?
Something here is more than meets the eye.
We didn't have any inkling that there might have been somebody else out there who did it.
No!
So, you know, it was a turning point. I called him into my office, and he came and sat with my investigator and me. And, you know, it didn't really go anywhere with him beyond that. It's not like he was a witness or that we could use him, but that tip was invaluable because it sent us in a different direction very early on in this investigation.
Yeah. So there's that. This is how we got here. A Mike with the gravelly voice. Mike with the gravelly voice is what sent you down this. Why? Why would you just believe this Mike with the gravelly voice knows anything and he's not just some unhappy person who doesn't like the police?
Yeah. You know, and this might have been somebody who was trying to get publicity, trying to get, you know, weasel their way into a case they didn't belong in.
Is there really a Mike with a gravelly voice, or is this just what they've had to say because it's like, this was a bad decision? We better come up with some reason why we went down this road.
Oh, that's a really good idea. We got to save ourselves, folks. We're going to need a scapegoat.
It's such a fantastical, weird... There's nothing to it, even. It's not like... And he came to me with this evidence.
With a small bag that contained things that the police never collected. Yeah, that would make sense. But there was nothing there other than, look inside the house. The call's coming from inside the house. No, it wasn't.
And that makes more sense than all of this. Mike, because Mike with the gravelly voice said so. Let's go down this road.
Yeah.
And...
Just because you want something to be true doesn't mean it is.
God, that just seems so asinine. If I were Karen Reed, I mean, Karen Reed's going to go down whatever road is presented to her that's going to make her look the best. So I get why Karen Reed did it. If it were me and I was on trial for something that I know I didn't do, or I don't even know how I want to phrase it, but if an attorney came to me for whatever reason and said, this Mike with the gravelly voice called, and he has a completely other theory of what actually happened that you'll have no memory of, but we think it might be something. Even though I know you are really thinking you might have actually hit him, and you're sitting there and you're, you know, you contemplated it, you kind of feel like it might have happened, you told your dad you struck something. This guy with the gravelly voice, he's the one that probably has the real truth.
Yeah, we're going to roll with that.
I'm going to roll with the gravelly voice Mike. Jesus, I'd love to find out who gravelly voice Mike is at the end of this, because he's caused some shit.
Do you think we ever will?
No, I would, you know, I would love to. I would, if I ever interview Yannetti or anybody, that's my question. What happened to gravelly voice Mike?
Yeah, who's Mike? Let's talk to Mike. It's always fucking Mike. You know?
I don't know. It feels ridiculous. It feels utterly ridiculous that gravelly voice Mike is the reason that they went down that road. This is the classic. This is the, we'll go from the beginning. It's a two-parter. Dateline, the big one.
He didn't look mortally wounded as far as I could see, but could I have done something that knocked him out and drunkenness and in the cold didn't come to again?
And this would have been the moment you dropped him off at the party.
Yeah,
thinking.
Yeah.
And that's all you need to know. He didn't look mortally wounded when she dropped him off at the party.
So did he look wounded at all? Because why would you say it that way?
Why would you say anything about being mortally wounded if he went into the house like you say you saw? You know, why... None of it makes any sense.
I said, could I have hit him? Did I hit him?
How could that have been? I mean, you dropped him off at the house.
I don't know what threats could have been. It was howling wind. I had YouTube blasting on the stereo. And I thought, did he somehow try to flag me down, which was the reaction I was hoping to garner as I slowly pulled away from the house? Did he come out and maybe trip or bend over to pick up his cell phone and I ran over his foot and then he passed out drunk? I mean, I didn't think I hit him, but could I have clipped him? Could I have tagged him in the knee and incapacitated him?
What's interesting is when they have now put together the evidence about like how he was injured and how it makes sense with the vehicle, it's exactly what she says.
Yeah. Yeah.
It's exactly what she says. Could I have clipped him? Could I have hit him in the knee? Well, that's what the evidence sure points to. How did you know that?
Because she did it, because she was there.
Exactly. And then she's, go ahead.
There was a place, and this, work with me on this little metaphor here. There's a massage place about 30 miles away from where I am, and they have a frequently asked questions thing on their website. What if I fall asleep during my massage? Well, your body knows that you're being massaged. Your brain is going to know it. Even if you're asleep, some part of you has a recollection that this is happening. Well, it's the same thing with Karen Reed. Even though she's drunk, her brain is processing this. So it's sitting in there somewhere. It's like somebody is recording it. You may not have watched it when it was live, but it's in there somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
You know, she had a recollection that this happened. And it's coming out in these little clips, these little snippets, like what we're watching. She's just, once in a while, she'll get this brief showing in her mind. And it's exactly what happened.
Yeah.
Because she saw it happen. It was live. She saw it live.
Well, Karen, eventually, if you're following along at home, decided to start believing her ego and that none of this could have possibly happened. And she loves to take those ego baths.
Those moments are just lovely and bittersweet. Everyone's telling me they love me and I look beautiful and knock them dead. And it's a nice little ego bath that we take walking in there.
Jesus Christ.
Oh, my God.
And
it's
knock,
not a spa.
And knock them dead. You already did that, Karen.
Oh, Tony. Ouch. But yeah,
the irony of it, it's an ego bath, and they're telling me to knock him dead. This is what's coming out of your mouth, Karen. It's an ego bath and knock him dead. Oh. There is zero self-awareness with Karen Reed. None.
Deflection and what do they call it? Is it Darvo? Is that what I'm coming up with here?
Deflect.
Hang on, I gotta find this.
Deflect, avoid.
Yes. Deny, attack, reverse victim, and offender.
Yep. It's exactly
what
she's
doing here.
Yep. Deny, attack, reverse victim, and offender. Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. This is a classic case of Darvo right here. If you ever needed an example, that was it. Not saying that she murdered him, but she might have caused his death.
Clipped him?
Might have.
Yeah. Did.
Feels like it.
Evidence shows it. So at the end of the day, she murdered him. Because if she had knowledge that he was injured, she denies it. She does. He didn't look mortally wounded, but she's still contemplating, could I have clipped him, hit him in the knee or something? Like specifically what happened? Propelled him into the yard.
Injured?
There was some injury in that area. I mean, it's yes. So there was injury, but it was explained by I think it was Welcher how all of that would happen, how the velocity, and I'm not an expert in any of that stuff, how it would have worked.
How it makes sense.
How it could have propelled him, and how it would have moved, and then Arca showed how that would work with a dummy that was tethered. Take the dummy off the tether, and yeah, you're going to have him fly. So there you go. And she says all of that. So at the end of the day, I don't know how you don't think she did it. I don't know how anyone thinks anything else happened. The house story makes zero sense logically. And if that's not your story, then how did her taillight get broken? How did all these pieces get under the snow, deep, deep under the snow, that they had to wait till everything to melt after it had been covered with ice because everybody trampled around the area when it was the crime scene? How did that stuff get there?
Yeah.
Because it would need to have been placed essentially before the accident would have happened. And this all this planting of the evidence, all these things would have had to have happened with such precise timing, and everybody, I just don't buy it. I've tried to hear both sides of this. I've tried to look at both sides. And she has sunk her own ship. Had she not made all these statements and the consciousness of guilt that is there, that is off the charts, I don't know. I mean, there would have been arguments for reasonable doubt had she not said all those things. But then you got the car data and the phone data. And that, to me, is pretty damn damning.
Mm-hmm.
So, there you go. That's our look back at the world of Karen Reed here on the program. And closing arguments begin Friday. This will be very, very amusing to watch. Press subscribe. Let us know in the comments what you thought about all of that we just went through today, our little look back at Karen Reed.
Craving nonstop true crime updates? Press subscribe now and get the latest cases, analysis, and expert commentary delivered straight to your feed. Only from the Hidden Killers podcast and True Crime Today.
Hi, I'm Richard Karn, and you may have seen me on TV talking about the world's number one expandable garden hose. Well, the brand new Pocket Hose Copperhead with Pocket Pivot is here, and it's a total game changer. Old-fashioned hoses get kinks and creases at the spigot, but the Copperhead's Pocket Pivot swivels 360 degrees for full water flow and freedom to water with ease all around your home. When you're all done, this rust-proof anti-burst hose shrinks back down to pocket size for effortless handling and tidy storage. Plus, your super light and ultra-durable pocket hose Copperhead is backed with a 10-year warranty. What could be better than that? I'll tell you what, an exciting exclusive offer just for you. For a limited time, you can get a free pocket pivot and their 10-pattern sprayer with the purchase of any size Copperhead hose. Just text WATER to 64000. That's WATER to 64000 for your two free gifts with purchase. WATER to 64000.
By texting 64000, you agree to receive recurring automated marketing messages from Pocket Hose. Message and data rates may apply. No purchase required. Terms apply. Available at pockethose.com/terms.
What if I told you that right now, millions of people are living with a debilitating condition that's so misunderstood, many of them don't even know that they have it. That condition is obsessive compulsive disorder, or OCD. I'm Dr. Patrick McGrath, the Chief Clinical Officer of NOCD. And in the 25 years I've been treating OCD, I've met so many people who were suffering from the condition in silence, unaware of just what it was. OCD can create overwhelming anxiety and fear around what you value most, make you question your identity, beliefs, and morals, and drive you to perform mentally and physically draining compulsions or rituals. Over my career, I've seen just how devastating OCD can be when it's left untreated. But help is available. That's where NOCD comes in. NOCD is the world's largest virtual therapy provider for obsessive compulsive disorder. Our licensed therapists are trained in exposure and response prevention therapy, a specialized treatment proven to be incredibly effective for OCD. So visit NOCD.com to schedule a free 15-minute call with our team. That's NOCD.com.